Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Elvis Chidera. He is an Android engineer at .learn. You can learn about them at dotlearn.io. He's an Android engineer there. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Are you?
I'm good. Thanks for chatting with me. Where are you calling from?
Lagos, Nigeria.
Oh, okay. So you're from Lagos, Nigeria, and I read about you on a post that you wrote on freecodecamp.org you started programming how many years ago?
That was about 8 years ago.
Yeah, about 8 years ago. And what was interesting about it was that you wrote your first app was not written on a computer.
Yes, it was on a small Nokia phone.
Like a little, like when I think of a Nokia phone, I think of a little black and white phone that plays Snake.
Yeah, a little bit more advanced than that one, but just the feature phone, little small phone with the numeric keypad and small screen, not as smart as the smartphone of today.
Okay, so this is the Nokia 2690 that came out in 2010.
Yes.
It didn't have a hidden keyboard or flip open to a keyboard?
No. You basically had to, you have the letters and you have to type a key several times to get a particular character.
Really? So you're saying you just go like 1111, 222, 555?
Exactly. That's how you type some words on it. It was crazy. It was difficult for me. Unfortunately, I couldn't get anyone to get me a computer, and there was nobody around there that had a computer. So I was I really wanted to get into programming, which was driven by my curiosity to. I spent a lot of time downloading games because I was given that phone a few months ago, so most of my time we spent going online searching for the latest game to download and all that. So at the point, I was like, "How does all this stuff work? How do I type xyz.com and it opens up this page?" So I just went to Google and I searched for how to build a website. So it led me to the W3 school's tutorial on HTML and CSS. So I saw this funny looking thing, which they call, HTML tags. I was like, why can't they build, websites in English? So I started learning that. From the tutorial, they said prerequisite was you have a laptop, you have a notepad to type your code and all that. But I tried looking for a computer. I couldn't get anyone. So I just had to substitute a laptop for my phone and went online to look for an app I could easily use to type in code. Not exactly code, just a text editor. So I was typing the HTML tags there and upload to a free hosting service, and then I'll now look at it through my browser.
Seriously, I'm looking at this phone. This is 128 by 160. It's a 100 ppi density. It's basically like a 2-inch screen, a couple of centimeters, and it's color though, which is nice. But that's basically it. It's a pretty small screen. How many lines of code could you see?
I think I could see about six or five. That's when I go full screen mode. But if I have the program toolbar or title bar, there it's like five or four, depending on the font size.
Did you have to think about storage space or memory? Did you run out of space?
I didn't, because I was able to get a memory card, external memory card, which I put into the device. That was about 2 gigabytes of storage, and it was a lot back then. There weren't a lot of heavy files, and since it's a featured phone, you don't have most of the apps on the phone. We are just about 500 KB, 500 kilobytes, 200 kilobytes, 100 kilobytes. So space wasn't really an issue, except you had large video files on your phone.
Mm. So you started doing HTML, you found a tutorial at W3 Schools, and you're using basically Notepad and this free upload. But then you started doing J2ME. What is J2ME?
So that's Java 2 Micro Edition. You build apps for the featured phone using that variant of Java. So it's not unlike the standard edition. There are some stripped down things that are not available there. Mostly the GUI parts of Java, which like the swing and the rest. It's totally different than GUI parts. It was built for all these low-end devices, the featured phones, some older devices use it and all that. It's still Java, but just a variant of it.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it runs televisions and, you know, printers, mobile phones. You can do like sensors. Like, it was basically Internet of Things before Internet of Things.
Yes, I did see on the book when I was learning of it's being used in PDAs, pagers, and a few other stuff. But I didn't get to use it on any of those devices. I was only programming for a featured phone because that was the only thing I had then.
Mm-hmm. So you just said PDAs, portable digital assistants. That reminds me of when I was writing my first apps. I wrote on a Palm Pilot, and the Palm Pilot was a black and white screen that was about 160 by 160, a very similar kind of a device, except it didn't have any internet connectivity. I didn't have any phone to attach to it. So I really couldn't program on it, and I programmed for it. It had about 4K of memory, but how did you program on a feature phone? I mean, you couldn't compile the Java on the phone itself, right?
Yes, I couldn't. Luckily for me, I found a tool, which was also free. So I can't remember the programmer name, but it was a Russian, and the app was, I had to, I can't remember how I got to the app, but I remember the sites being in the Russian language, and I most of the app also was in Russian. Mm-hmm. So I got to this app that allowed it's called J2ME SDK Mobile. It allows you to write J2ME codes, run them, and then build an APK, a JAR file, which you could easily install, download, and install on any feature phone. So it was basically an IDE sort of. So it had a text editor. It does the compilation and all that, and it gives you a JAR file which you could just upload to anywhere. So I was lucky to have seen the app. That was how I was able to actually compile my first app.
It seems like this is 2010, 2011. It seems like you were compiling in the cloud before the cloud existed.
I moved to J2ME. That was around 2012, 2013. I started with HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and I spent like two years or 1 year there before I moved over to J2ME. So I was using the app was actually, it wasn't on the cloud per se. It was running on the featured phone. So
No, I understand that. I'm saying that the phone did not compile it. The cloud did. The Russian website compiled the Java, right?
No, it was actually compiling on your phone. You don't need to be online to use the app.
Oh, well, what does the Russian site then do?
that was where I got the app. I downloaded the app from there.
Oh, so the app downloads and then it does some magic on the phone. How long? It must have taken forever to compile, though.
It depends on what's on the app. So I realized the more complex my app gets, the wait time also increases. And it got to a point where it couldn't even compile the app anymore. So I had to start removing some features in the app and just for it to compile. And I was thinking of having two versions of the app because I couldn't get it together in one jar file to compile.
Hmm. Wow. And just to be clear, you were typing, you know, public class hello world, going like 222333. Did it autocomplete or did it, you know, could you copy paste? Do you know, this seems pretty slow.
There was no autocomplete, so you had to type. You have to type that using the keypad, which just like you said was 222333. Fortunately, yeah. I got so good at it that I knew how to. So it's like this: when you type, you have to wait for a few seconds for you to type the next thing. So what I did was I'll type and use the arrow key to make that delay faster and move on to the next thing. So I got so used to it that I wasn't. You can't get as fast as using a computer, but I made it somehow easier for myself.
That sounds amazing. So how long did it take to, and this was for a social media site, you were basically trying to compete with Facebook. You were writing your own Facebook.
Yes, my Facebook killer.
Mm-hmm. And how did that work? Are you a Facebook killer now? Did you win?
No, I don't drive cars that it open like this. So it was a failure because I looked at product differently back then. So when I see Facebook, I just see this ton of features that if I'm able to do the same thing and create more features and release it, probably people will just, oh, Facebook doesn't have this and it doesn't have that and come over to the platform. So my idea was simple for the social media thing. So it was just to use some open source project and then mm-hmm. build on top of that. There are two core features. There one, back then Facebook didn't show your friends that were online, and they also didn't show it was built for people you already know in real life. So mine mm-hmm. was for people you know in real life, people you don't know in real life, strangers and everybody just connect. So mm-hmm. I launched that and it wasn't good. I was basically begging people to stay on the site, trying to mm-hmm. give free stuff on the site for them to stay, but it didn't work out. So
but there was value though, don't you think, in doing the work? Like, I hope you don't regret the experiment.
No, I didn't. That was what I was learning HTML and CSS all this while, and I was just building mini projects and all that. But when I decided to take on that project, I was able to go deep into each. I have this feature I want to implement, and I have to learn this to a particular level to be able to implement it. So that was when I, it made me realize or look at product differently now. I don't see it that same way. And, it also helped me in my programming journey. So mm-hmm. I learned a lot on that field experiment or field project.
Mm-hmm. So how many different apps did you write? Because I know that you wrote another app that actually got written up like in the newspaper. You had like thousands of users. And I think you were only 14 at the time.
Yes, I was 14 back then. After my first field project, I decided to do something else. And this time around, I wanted something that people would be willing to pay for. So I looked around and I saw that I could actually make SMS cheaper for people here in Nigeria. So mm-hmm. the idea was to make SMS cheaper and also make it easy for you to send messages to several people. Back then, I think most phones, you couldn't send messages to multiple people at once. So let's say you want to send an Easter or Christmas message to all your friends and family, you have to basically send to one, send to the second person, send to the third person. So mm-hmm. those are the two core functionalities I plan to I wanted to add to that app. So that was when I stumbled. That was when I was still learning Java. So I had to build the app. I couldn't afford anyone to work on the website or the backend for me. So I built the app, built the backend which the app was talking to, and I also built the landing page where you get to download the app. Since there's basically no official app store for the featured phone, so mm-hmm. you most likely be hosting your app on your website or something like that. So that was my second big project, and it went well, but I didn't handle it properly back then, and I think it's just stayed around for about a year or two and before I shut it down.
At this point, had you moved over to a laptop?
No, I was still programming with my phone.
Mm-hmm. How long did you spend on the phone doing your programming in a small world, in a small environment?
I spent all holiday, after school, and every day, like school holidays. So I was basically on this phone. I was able to convince a bunch of people to give me their phone batteries they are not using. So nice. I had backup powers.
And you did this for a couple of years?
Yes, I did that for about, I think about 3-4 years or so.
Mm-hmm. And you went, when did you go like and get like upgrade to a laptop, and did you have to go to internet cafes, or how did you get your internet when you moved off the phone?
Okay. When I got my laptop, that was 2014. I got a modem for that. So I just paid for a subscription and was using that on the laptop. And it was I still remember the experience up to now. It was a very cool, awesome moment for me.
Do you still, I'm just curious, but do you still have the phone like in a drawer somewhere?
Unfortunately, it died. I think I used it too much, and it just said, okay, dude, this is too much. You're killing me.
Yeah. I was like thinking that if when you get famous, you're going to have to go to the museum and it'll be on the wall and it'll say, this, here's where Elvis used the Nokia 2690.
I guess it should be somewhere at home. I kept it somewhere, but I know it's no longer alive.
Yeah. Interesting. So do you know a lot of people who are writing apps this way? Because it seems very constrained. And I'm curious, do you think it makes you a better programmer now? Like, not everyone learned this way, right? Some people, they started on a laptop. Do you think you're more you're more careful because you started small?
Okay. I don't think much people started this way. The few people that did either didn't have the perseverance to do it that much until they were able to get a laptop. For me, it was, I think, ignorance or something, or the love for the act. So I ended up spending a lot of time hoping I'll just build this big thing, and all of a sudden I will be on movies or something like that. So I had this determination to keep using the phone. But currently it made me like, it can wake me up in the morning and I can remember most of the Java syntax and all that. But mostly for whiteboard interview type of questions where they ask you for syntax and stuff like that. But basically I would prefer, currently I'm trying to help a few developers that don't have access to a laptop now to get laptops for them. Personal commitment I'm making on my part, because I don't really want people to spend time doing that. They should probably spend time trying to solve a problem, not taking 3 months to build an app that probably would have taken them 2 weeks or 1 month to do if they had a laptop or a computer.
Mm-hmm. On your Medium post, you said you're from the village. In the U.S. here, we have basically cities, and then we have like small towns or farming towns. And the farther away from the city you get, you know, the worse the internet is and the less access you have. My brother lives on a farm, and they don't have wired internet. They can't buy internet because they're too far away. So I don't know if that's a village, but it's pretty far out. You know, he can't see his neighbors kind of thing. How far out is the village in Nigeria, and what is the difference between people who live there versus people who live in an apartment in the city?
Okay. I think the definition of village is basically the same thing like in the States. So mm-hmm. you have this that far away place that's disconnected from a few basic things. I think now technically I refer to where I was from as a very, very small town. Mm-hmm. That was in Port Harcourt. But I moved to Lagos. That was last 2 years. I was 2016. And mm-hmm. it's been totally different. The whole experience in Lagos has been totally awesome. Lagos, in Nigeria is the tech ecosystem. Yeah, it's the Silicon Valley. If I'm to relate it to something, it's going to be like the Silicon Valley of the US. So we have this tech ecosystem here. We have several huge companies working on very awesome stuff. We have Andela training future badass developers. We have e-commerce shopping sites, Conga, Jumia, and a couple of them. So when I'm moving from the village to the city, you get all these opportunities you most likely not get in the village. You get access to better internet, steady power supply, and a lot of stuff. It's basically very different. It's a village is very similar. The description you gave is exactly the same thing in Nigeria. Mm-hmm.
But Port Harcourt is still like a couple million people. I assume you were outside Port Harcourt.
Yes, it was just a very small place in Port Harcourt, and I would say it wasn't really developed, or it's mm-hmm. not really developed. But I think, just like I said, I'll technically refer to it as a very, very small town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So not Port Harcourt yourself, but the town outside that you stayed in. Maybe how many people you think are there?
I'll estimate. Okay, I'll say about. I'm not sure I can give a proper estimate. I didn't really got much.
You're working. You're on your phone programming. How was it? Was it when you moved to Lagos? Was it something where you needed to get a job and you used your app kind of as the interview? And you said, "Here's this app I built."
When I moved to Lagos, so I was freelancing from Port Harcourt, working mm-hmm. with clients across Nigeria. So mm-hmm. I eventually worked with this client that. Was very impressed with what I did for him and invited me to come over. They have this opening for a mobile developer position and just invited me to come to work with them. So that was, when I moved to Lagos. I just had this call on, I think, Saturday, and I booked my flight the next Monday. I didn't really plan much. I moved over to Lagos for a full-time role here in Lagos at a company called Vericore Technologies. Mm-hmm. They're into making apps and content for children. So I worked with them for a few months before moving over to .learn.
So what does .learn do?
Okay, .learn basically is an edtech startup. So we created a technology at MIT that is able to compress, able to reduce the file size of videos to less than about, depending on what the video contains, it could get compression rate of, you could get a video of 1 minute for about 200 kilobytes or 100 kilobytes, depending on the context of the video. So, we developed this tech that represents videos rather than frame by frame, where you have these pixels and all that. You have text instructions that describe what is on the screen, how this animates from point A to point B and all that. So by doing that, you could represent things like videos in Khan Academy or coding screencast in a very, very data light file, yeah.
How many? So, are most people on Android now in 2018 in Nigeria? Most people have small Android phones, or do you see J2MEs anymore? And do they? How do people watch their videos?
Yes, guys. J2ME is still a thing, yeah. Despite the rapid growth of an adoption rate of smartphones, yeah, you still have. I think when I check the numbers, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's still about a 70-30% ratio. So we have 70 for J2ME phones and you have 30 for smartphones. That's if I'm not messing up with the numbers. So it still represents a lot of, lots of people still use it over here. But over time, like I think by 2020 or so, we'll have smartphones winning because we have a bunch of companies bringing in Android phones, introducing different Android phones over here.
And most people I see when I'm in Africa, and mostly I'm in East Africa and South Africa, but I see Huawei and Samsung phones, Tecno maybe.
Yes, Tecno, Huawei, the other players. They are very popular here. So they partner with lots of local guys here, and they're able to sell these phones here. So you most likely see a Tecno or any of these other players compared to a Samsung or an iPhone or something like that.
And do you still do any J2ME? Are you trying to get .learn on these smaller phones, or what's the minimum phone for .learn?
So you could play the videos using on the web, or we have libraries for Android and iOS, and we haven't ported the library yet for the J2ME platform, but that's most likely something I will do myself. Despite it's been long, I did anything related to J2ME, but.
And I understand that the library of content that you have is also Africa focused. You're an education company, but also focused on education in Africa.
Yes, in Africa. So we noticed we did a test that was in Ghana. We realized that more students preferred locally created content versus we showed them a locally created content and a content from Khan Academy, and there was strong preference for the locally created content.
Very cool. And have you done much iOS development, or do you see any iOS over there?
I haven't done much iOS development. iOS or iPhones not the majority, yeah. So if you're looking at a Nigerian focused thing, you know, you most likely be looking at either J2ME or Android. But I've seen several iOS developers over here.
Okay. And is that your plan right now, is to focus mostly on Android apps? By the way, I never asked you, did you do any kind of formal education, or do you see a lot of people going to college for mobile development in Nigeria?
Yes. So I've seen several people go to college, study computer science, not mobile development specifically. You usually pick that up from online. Like most developers I've seen, yeah, are either self-taught or they went to a particular bootcamp or coding program that they used to kickstart their career in mobile app development.
But now that you are a working developer, do you feel any need to go to school, or do you think that you pretty much are on your way?
Yes, I feel a very strong need to go to college. I believe I'm very interested in computer science, and I believe going to college will go a long way in, I'm going to learn a lot and be exposed to a lot by going to college. And I don't know, I just feel I should get this thing and just get it over with, rather than just everybody asking, my mom asking, my dad asking, Elvis, what's up, or something like that.
So people can check you out on Twitter. You're at Elvis N, the letter N, and then Chidera, C-H-I-D-E-R-A, Elvis N Chidera. I'll put a link to your Twitter in the in the show notes, and also a link to your article on Medium about how you went from programming a Nokia feature phone to working for a startup. Thanks for chatting with me today.
Yeah, thanks.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.